U.S. President Joe Biden declares the COVID-19 pandemic is over in America. World leaders descend in London for the state funeral of Queen Elizabeth II. President Marcos arrives in the U.S. ahead of his address before the U.N. General Assembly. The Education Department laments the exclusion of its proposed ₱500 million budget for its program for special needs students. PWD rights advocate attorney Rowena Guanzon will join us later on in the program to discuss this issue. And officials of the Masungi Geo Reserve in the Rizal warn of a looming takeover of a portion of the conservation site. We'll tackle that with Anne Dumailang, make that Dumailang of the Masungi Geo Reserve Foundation. Hi, I'm Pamina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story at this hour, the pandemic, at least in the U.S., is over. That statement coming from U.S. President Joe Biden. In an interview with CBS News, Biden admitted the problem with COVID remains and the government is still working on it. But he says no one in the country is wearing masks and everybody seems to be in pretty good shape. The U.S. has recorded over 95.6 million COVID cases and over a million deaths. Last week, the head of the World Health Organization said the end of the COVID-19 pandemic was in sight, but he also warned against complacency. The Philippines logged more than 2,000 more COVID cases Sunday. Of the newly reported infections, 1,080 are from Metro Manila. 35 additional coronavirus-related deaths were also reported. The positivity rate for the week of September 11 to 17 is at 13.2%. That's higher than last week's 12.3%. ABS-CBN's data analytics chief Edson Guido says this is also the first time since early August that the weekly positivity rate increased. This comes as the country makes the wearing of face masks optional when outdoors. An infectious diseases expert says the COVID situation in the Philippines needs careful monitoring. Dr. Ronji Insulante asserts the public should not let their guard down as the number of infections in the country rises again.
We need to monitor the cases, even if the cases are stable, no? But I think there are people, there are population na kailangan nating i-monitor. And ito rin yung nakikita natin sa mga hospital na na-admit because of their comorbidities dahil sa COVID naging unstable. Kadalasan sa nakikita namin ngayon are those 60 years old and above, no? And a lot of them have 2 or even 3 comorbidities, no? And itong mga na-admit ngayon ay na-admit dahil not necessarily because of pneumonia but because of their comorbidities. No?
On the UK as it prepares to say its final farewell to Queen Elizabeth II. The Queen's funeral service will be held in Westminster Abbey at 11 in the morning, London time. That's 6 p.m. here in Manila. The event will draw dignitaries from across the globe and a massive worldwide audience watching online and on television. Grand processions through the streets of London and then at Windsor Castle will accompany the Queen's coffin before it is buried in St. George's Chapel at Windsor. Buckingham Palace also said the Queen will be buried together with her late husband, the Duke of Edinburgh. Monday's service will be the first time cameras will be allowed into the funeral of a British monarch. In 1952, King George VI's funeral procession, but not the service itself, was broadcast on television. World leaders head to London to attend the late Queen's state funeral. U.S. President Joe Biden and his wife Jill head the diplomatic guest list. They pay their respects to the Queen at Westminster Hall ahead of the funeral. a host of royals also attending, including Japan's Emperor Naruhito and Empress Masako. In their first overseas trip since assuming the throne in 2019, leaders of Commonwealth nations are also traveling to London, including Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. As for the Philippines, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is sending his sister, Irene Marcos Araneta, to be his special representative to the state funeral. President Marcos left Manila Sunday to attend the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Britain's new monarch leads the royal family in thanking the public for their support ahead of Queen Elizabeth II's funeral. King Charles III says he's been deeply touched by the messages of condolences the family has received over the past 10 days. He adds they were moved beyond measure by everyone, from London to Edinburgh to Cardiff, who took the trouble to pay the respects to the Queen. The Buckingham Palace, meanwhile, released a new portrait of the Queen on the eve of her funeral. The smiling portrait was taken at the Windsor Castle in May to mark the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. In other news, President Marcos now in the U.S. for a six-day working visit, highlighted by his upcoming address before the United Nations General Assembly. Pia Gutierrez reports.
President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is now in the United States for a landmark six-day working visit, which marks his first engagement with the United Nations as Philippine president and his return to the country after several decades. His first stop for today, a meeting with members of the Filipino community at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. About 1,000 Filipinos welcomed the president, who arrived with his wife, First Lady Liza Araneta Marcos, son Ilocos Representative Sandro Marcos, and members of his cabinet at the Newark Liberty International Airport shortly before 12 noon today. Many of the attendees came from nearby East Coast cities, with some even coming as far as Canada. In his speech, the president could not hide his excitement to be back in the United States, particularly in New York, where he said he had not been able to visit for 25 years. He noted New York is a special place for him, as the city was where him and his wife first met. The president will, of course, be spending the rest of his visit in New York starting tonight. And the president also took time to thank Filipinos in the United States for supporting him during the 2022 elections, noting that he won here despite not being able to physically campaign in the United States. He also acknowledged Filipino Americans for their contributions to the country, noting that almost 40% of the Philippines' OFW remittances in 2021 came from the U.S. The president also expressed his admiration and praise, particularly to Filipino health workers who were in the front line of the United States response, especially during the height of the pandemic. Marcos Jr. also assured the Filipino community here that his administration's priorities are geared towards economic development to make sure that no Filipino will soon be forced to work outside the country. However, not all are happy to see Marcos Jr. return to the United States. In fact, a group of anti-Marcos activists staged a rally at the venue shortly before the start of the meeting to protest the president's visit. We were not able to see that group, but they live streamed the entire rally on Facebook. But the rally, however, was dispersed even before the president arrived. Aside from Filipinos here, the president says he is scheduled to hold several meetings with business leaders and organizations to hopefully attract investments in the Philippines. He's also expected to hold bilateral talks with a number of world leaders who will also attend the United Nations General Assembly. But except for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, Malacanang or the president has yet to name who these leaders will be. He hopes, however, that he will be able to meet particularly with President Joe Biden at the sidelines of the UNGA, as he expressed confidence that U.S.-Philippines relations will become stronger during his term. The highlight of his visit will be his speech during the UN high-level general debate of the UNGA that will happen on Tuesday afternoon. That's early morning Wednesday in the Philippines. The speech will be around 15 minutes, and the president is expected to articulate his administration's priorities, which include climate change, the rule of law, food security, as well as his administration's pandemic recovery plans.
That is our very own Pia Gutierrez reporting to us then from New Jersey. A Filipino community leader in New York hopes President Marcos can lay down concrete plans to protect Filipinos in the U.S. Joseph Lineses says a lot of Filipinos in New York, especially the elder ones, want to return home to the Philippines as incidents of hate crime rise across the U.S. But they are being forced to stay for the benefits they receive there, especially health care.
I want to ask the president to, hoping na matulungan niya through the help of, sa US, yung parang peace at how to protect our own kababayan. Kasi hindi lang namang Filipino ang tinatamaan, buong ASEAN rin po eh. Kaya, pero, particularly ang dami na victims sa Philippine consulate. And his words are promising, but I would like to see it in action po. Hoping na makatulong yung presidente na parang okay yung mga plano niya, maganda yung infrastructure, pero yung mga situations na nangyayari ang mga OFW yun nga. Kasi dahil nga dito kasi yung pera, dito yung padala, dito yung remittance, kaya ayaw nilang umuwi pa.
Political analysts believe Marcos's participation in the UN General Assembly signifies how much his administration values multilateralism. One particular issue they believe Marcos should frame as a multilateral one is Manila's 2016 arbitral victory against China in the West Philippine Sea.
If we look at it, yung 2016 arbitral award, yes, it is between the Philippines and China, and it is a story of how the Philippines triumphed over China in terms of the legal basis of our territorial claims. But beyond this bilateral dynamics, the 2016 arbitral award and our claim in West Philippine Sea is really about the rule of law and protecting territorial sovereignty. These two issues are not really bilateral in its very nature, but really it concerns everyone. No? It's it's the foundation of the current international order. States respecting each other's territory, states respecting each other's right for self-determination.
The burden is on him to continue that pattern. Mm. The former president mentioned it, twice in a virtual setting. This will be a chance for him to mention it in front of the head of states of something like, I believe, 200 already indicated that they'll be attending the United Nations General Assembly. Mm. So in front of President Joe Biden, in front of the President of the European Union, in front of the Prime Minister of Japan, in front of the Prime Minister of India, and probably in front of the Chinese Prime Minister.
Both Gloria and De Castro also hope the possible one-on-one meeting between Marcos and U.S. President Joe Biden will push through.
I think it's a standing policy in the White House that the President of the United States should not meet, on a bilateral level, any head of state. Because that will indicate that, he's, in a way, given importance to a specific bilateral relation. So this will be very significant if you will have, of course, a side meeting between President Joe Biden and President Ferdinand Marcos Jr.
In case it does happen, I would say it, symbolizes the commitment of the United States to reinvigorating the alliance with the Philippines. No? But in case it doesn't happen, it doesn't mean that the United States is not committed to that end anymore. No? Mm-hmm. In fairness to the United States, Secretary Blinken just visited a month ago, and then you also have that phone call with President Biden. No? So there was already rapport that was established between the two heads of state. No? So the meeting with Biden would just be a plus, if you will, on the efforts of both sides to restart the alliance.
The Philippine Education Department denies excluding the special education program for learners with disabilities in its proposed 2023 budget. In a statement, the agency says it's allocated 532 million pesos for SPED, but it was not considered in the National Expenditure Program. The agency notes the non-allocation is a recurring issue every year. It vows to work with members of Congress to find other ways to fund DepEd programs. The Budget Department, meanwhile, defends the budget cut for DepEd, saying the agency failed to provide sufficient documentation and details of its SPED program. All right, for a reaction on this now, we're joined by PWD Rights Advocate, former COMELEC Commissioner, Attorney Rowena Guanzon. Attorney Bing, good morning to you. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Carmina, and thank you for this opportunity.
All right.
For P3PWD party list to give our 10 cents worth.
Okay, first of all, many issues here. It may seem like it's just a simple issue, but when you break it down, it's quite complicated. I'm going to go first to the main issue here. What was supposed to be a 532 million peso budget for special education for 2023 was not included in the National Expenditures Program. Let's take a look first at the ramifications. It's not included in the National Expenditure Program. What's going to happen, you think?
Well, you see, that budget is specifically for special learning in the Department of Education. That means that goes to our special education schools, our classrooms, for the teachers, and of course the facilities, which as of now, in fact, are quite inadequate. Now, so I cannot overemphasize the importance of that to our persons with disability families and children with special needs and learning disabilities. The DepEd is requested for 500 million in their budget, but they say that the DBM refused it or declined it. But if you look at the side of the... I was commissioner also of COA, by the way.
Mm.
If you look at the side also of the DBM, you know they have to balance the budget. And DBM Secretary Pangandaman, whom I have known for quite some time since my Senate service with Senator Angara, told me that their problem is that they have to... The solution is it should really lie with the DepEd because... Their budget for special education.
Attorney Guanzon, did we lose our connection? Okay, we're gonna try and reconnect with Attorney Rowena Guanzon there, PWD Rights Advocate. We have her back. Okay, so Attorney Guanzon, you were saying DBM. Go ahead.
The DBM secretary told me that the problem is the obligation rate of DepEd is very low. It's only about 1.113% out of their 500, of their 1. No, I think they have a 2 billion budget.
Mm-mm.
And so what it means is that they were able to spend only a little over a 1% of their total budget this year. That is remarkably significantly something that the Vice President Duterte should look at. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because there's another thing here before we run out of time. The DepEd is saying that the agency allocated half a billion, 532 pesos for SPED, but it was not considered in the National Expenditure Program. When you go to the other side, when you go to the DBM, they're saying no sufficient documentation was provided to support the same, such as details of the proposed amount with specific purposes, basis of computation, parameters, status of the ongoing conversion and establishment of inclusive learning resource centers funded under the 2021 and 2022 GAA. So if you...
The solution, Carmina, is with the DepEd. Because they have unspent hundreds of millions in their 2022 budget, which they can spend up to December 2023. Perhaps they're not telling the Vice President Secretary of DepEd that they have a very low obligation rate. I believe DepEd is earnest, but I also agree with the DBM that they have to balance the budget, and the Congress is also has to balance the budget, and it is DepEd's job now to make sure that their efficiency expenditure is good, and that they should try to spend the money, their budget correctly as fast as possible. Can you imagine a 1.13% obligation rate?
Mm-hmm.
That's really almost ano ba yan, kung bibigyan ko yan ng grado yung mga teachers dyan, eh this, wala pang 70% mark yan. Mm. They're below the mark. So we are appealing to the DepEd and the DBM to, and the Congress, of course, to solve this impasse. It is now in the hands of the Congress to ensure and take the DepEd to task, mm, to make sure that the special education is not left out, and mm, that whatever surplus that the DepEd now has for this year, they can allocate or realign, yeah, to the special education.
So it's really, as you said a while ago, it's really now up to them. So that when they say that they vow to work with members of Congress to find other ways to fund DepEd programs, it's really, the initiative should really come from them. Is that what you're saying, Attorney Guanzon?
Yes, I agree with the DBM. They have so much surplus. If I were the one auditing them, I will give them a failing mark. I know that the DepEd is earnest, but they're not doing this correctly, budget-wise. So they really have to accept that there is... there are some things that they really have to improve. Mm-hmm. Now, they already have a surplus because their obligatory rate is only 1.1%. So they can realign this surplus this year, which they can spend up to December 2023 and give at least half a billion to special education, which our children really, really need. I am appealing to Congress and to the Finance Committee chairs of the Senate to please help us. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, the Speaker, who is a PWD rights advocate also, Speaker Martin Romualdez.
Here's the thing, though, Attorney Guanzon. Even if they solve it, they're only going to be solving it for 2023. What is needed there in terms of policy? Because now they're just finding ways, right? But is there a way, there's got to be a better way to sort of institutionalize this so that the SPED program will no longer have to wait if there's a surplus budget to find other ways for it to be funded? Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, ma'am. That is the job of Congress now, to take them to DepEd and the DBM to task, to how to do this institution-wise. Because you're right, we don't have to keep on begging for a special education budget every year. That it cannot appear zero in the budget. So technically, we don't want to see the word zero in our special education budget. And kukuha na lang kami, they will just get if there is a surplus. Mm-hmm. At right now, they can solve this problem because they have a surplus, right? For this year, they can realign. And then they have up to December 2023 to spend whatever was for SPED budget this year. Up to December 2023, they can realign their unspent funds. Mm-hmm. That's what the DBM is saying. But you are correct. We agree with you. We don't want to see anymore the number zero budget for SPED in our General Appropriations Act. Mm-hmm. That reflects very poorly on this government. Mm. So we're appealing to the Speaker and the Senate President, please, to create the necessary policy and budget reforms.
So, Attorney Guanzon, with what you're saying, you said you believe the DBM, you tend to agree with what they're saying. Are you then saying that the one at fault here is the DepEd?
No, I'm not saying that the one at fault is DepEd, because they also requested, right? But they also requested for half a billion for next year's budget, right? Mm-hmm. But they are not reflecting their surplus. That's what DBM is saying. You fix your budget. You give us the specifics. You ask for money for special ed, but you did not give us. But you did not give the DBM the necessary documents. I got that from Secretary Pangandaman of DBM. Mm-hmm. Let's do our job in coordination with each other, but having in mind the beneficiaries. I mean, nobody will disagree with me that we need funds for SPED, that our children with learning disabilities need all the help we can get. As it is, that half a billion budget is not even enough. Mm-mm. We have to source donations from private persons to buy braille paper for 5 pesos per page. And, you know, I cannot overemphasize that this problem is affecting thousands of children with learning disabilities and our families, and we should care. Government should care that this is an urgent problem that needs fixing.
Yeah, because let's devote this time now into that. What is the real situation here? The situation before the pandemic hit, the situation during the middle of the pandemic, and where do you hope to bring the plight of learners with disabilities?
We want a Senate inquiry on the status of SPED run by DepEd and the expenditure efficiency of DepEd. We want a Senate inquiry about that because, you know, the appropriations from the House will go to the Senate for their final, you know, work. So we're going to request the P3PWD and our coalition of PWD networks will request the Senate President for a Senate inquiry on the SPED situationer, national situationer, and the budget. So we can unmatch. You know, this is the situation. This is the need. You know, we need so many classrooms. We need so many teachers. This is the situation. This is the budget that you're allocating for next year. And this is what we have this year and for the last quarter. So these are all. This is something that can be really resolved if we work faster together. Mm. And the Persons with Disability Networks and P3PWD party lists are ready and willing to provide the data from our end, the beneficiaries.
Yeah, Attorney Guanzon, you gave us the needs, you gave us the situation. How do you then make sense of the special education budget being zero juxtaposed with the confidential fund of the agency amounting to 150 million pesos? How do you make sense of that?
You know, I think the courtesy, passage of the DepEd budget, courtesy is fine, but it is DepEd's job, really, to look at its mission in life. You see, your mission in life, and you rank children with learning disabilities as your top two mission in life. You should also have the heart to make sure that that's it's institutionalized in all the specifics in your budget. But that the BRM is correct. How can they put that in the NEP, the national project of the budget, proposed budget, when the DBM did not give the documentation? So there's no data, even for on our side. I think we really need to write the secretary and the vice president for a dialogue with the undersecretary that you will assign for our request for data in preparation for a request for a Senate inquiry.
Because something to the eyes of, you know, the public, Attorney Guanzon, it doesn't add up. You have 150 million peso confidential fund.
It doesn't.
You have budget surplus, as he said, but then there's zero budget for the special education program.
And there's confidential funds, so it doesn't add up. Well, it can add up if they know now that this is the problem and this is the way we're going to allocate it now. Okay, so we have so much in confidential funds. Maybe the vice president will say, oh, okay, let's give 1/4 of that to special education. And for our budget for this year, which we have not yet spent, how much of that can we spend for special education up to December 2023? Mm. You know, if it happens that we get a zero budget also in the Senate. Mm. So confidential funds, and you know, I was commissioner in audit also.
Yeah.
you're all aware. I was also mayor. And the confidential funds are audited by the Commission on Audit in sealed envelopes. That is really for national security. Mm-hmm. And I can understand if the Department Secretary of Education, the Vice President, means that she's Vice President. But I don't know the specifics of that, you know, because confidential funds are precisely confidential funds. Mm. But there is an auditing process for that with the COA. Mm. So we are relying on the COA to make sure that our taxpayers' money is well spent in confidential funds. But if the Department of Education has a problem now that involves children with learning disabilities, perhaps they will have the heart to allocate more for SPED taken from their other items as approved in the NEP by the DBM and the House of Representatives.
Okay, let me go full circle now, Attorney Guanzon. Going back to how I introduced you as Attorney Rowena Guanzon. Not yet party list representative for P3PWD. What's the latest on that? Why haven't you assumed your seat?
Well, I cannot discuss the case because there's a pending case. But we are waiting for, of course, the decision of the Supreme Court on this petition by Ronald Cardema for certiorari and temporary restraining order against the COMELEC. There's no restraining order against me. I mean, I am free to move around as a citizen, but P3PWD does not have a representative, even if we got 391,000 votes because of this pending Supreme case, and we appeal to the public to pray for us, and to pray for our government officials, and to pray for our Supreme Court justices.
We're going to have to leave it at that. We've run out of time. Attorney Rowena Guanzon there, PWD rights advocate. Thank you for taking time to talk to us. Maraming salamat po.
Salamat po.
And from there, we're going to take a quick break. Up ahead, a big-time rollback for diesel and kerosene set on Tuesday. We'll have that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with the ANC. And we're back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. A Taguig court has issued an arrest warrant for actor-host Vong Navarro in connection with the acts of lasciviousness case filed against him by model Denise Cornejo. Our very own Nico Bawa now joins us with details. Nico, what more can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. Vong Navarro is currently here at NBI headquarters while his legal team is processing his bail payment. He arrived here around 10 in the morning when, after the Taguig Metropolitan Trial Court, Branch 116, under Judge Angela Francesca Gin, issued an arrest warrant for Navarro for his act of lasciviousness, which was filed by victim Denise Cornejo. According to Navarro, when he gave a short interview here in the NBI, he was expressing his frustration over the case since it's been a long case, which he felt that he was going to win, but an arrest warrant was issued. He says he has already forgiven Denise Cornejo, but since 2014, there have been no attempts from either side to resolve the matter privately and ask if he would be open to settle it with Cornejo. He says it's something that he would have to talk to with his legal team. The bail payment is at 36,000 pesos, and his team is already settling it with the Taguig court. But for now, he's still here and waiting for the release orders to be issued and for him to be let go from the custody of the NBI. He was saying earlier that he feels strongly about his situation and that he will face the complaint. And he will still work at for his Showtime program, which is his daily work. And he says he's thanking his fans, for everyone who has continually given their support and prayers for him. And he's optimistic that he will be able to resolve the case and win it. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Nico Bawa there joining us on the line. Back here in the newsroom, an invasion. That's how the Masungi Geo Reserve Foundation describes the presence of dozens of armed men who have been encamped within the vicinity of the conservation site since last week. The men said to be from the Sinagdala Security Agency are reportedly planning to take over a huge portion of land in the protected area. Officials of the conservation site now calling on the police and concerned government agencies to take action. Let's now talk to Anne Dumaliang. She's a trustee of the Masungi Geo Reserve Foundation. Anne, good afternoon and welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us.
So tell us about the situation there as we speak. Are the armed men still there?
They still are. The media actually attempted to have an interview with them last Saturday, but they did not want to give any additional information. They didn't even come out of the area where they were hiding. Currently, there are 4 police vehicles that are on the ground, but we were told that they were only given instructions to prevent any further violence, to prevent a repeat, basically, of the physical attack and intimidation that we experienced in their hands last Friday. But this shouldn't end here. It's very clear that there is trespassing, forcible entry, and unlawful occupation. It's clear that they do not have any title over the land, and that this is an ongoing crime. They should be evicted and arrested for what they are doing.
And what we're seeing, the pictures that we're showing, are of the security personnel from the Sinagdala Security Agency. They are there upon the orders of whom?
We were told that this was there by the orders of a certain Beatrice Sungipal and a Joel Laino. There's someone named Nizar Toka who's been doing the recruitment activities on behalf of the security agency. They tell us that they have a survey plan issued by DENR in 2003, which is, to be honest, ridiculous because it has been titled since the 1950s and has been under a joint venture agreement with us since 2002.
Hmm. Which brings us to the next question. Where is the DENR in all of this?
We have already informed them about what's going on the ground. We hope that this does not escalate into any more acts of violence against environmental defenders. If you recall, 2 of our rangers were shot sometime in July 2021. This happened 6 days after we wrote to the DENR and sounded the alarm to them. I hope they take this one as seriously. We certainly do not want a repeat of that. We also know that this is simply the first step of how wide-scale occupations actually occur. This has happened before in 2016. We know how they run it. We know that they capitalize on bringing in huge amounts of people so that government isn't able to take them out. DENR should take action now. The damage will only get worse, right? We currently just have a security agency in the field. Once they start building structures on the sensitive area in this ecosystem, a lot more damage is bound to happen.
But what can you tell us about the activities now of the members of Sinagdala Security Agency who were actually there? What are they doing? And what are the precise orders given to them by those or the people that contracted their service?
The instruction to them, as some of them disclosed to us, was to overrun one of our ranger stations and to occupy a huge portion of the area up until a kilometer from where they are currently located. When we had the commotion last Friday, it was clear that there weren't just 20 people. More of them from behind came out, and it was clear that there are 30 and above, definitely no less.
Is it clear to you that this Sinagdala security agency is just acting on behalf or is just acting because someone contracted them? Or are they also part of this whole problem, that they are also wanting to take control? Go ahead.
When you talk about land speculation, typically, you know, it can take many forms, but it's not unusual to have the payment come in the form of possession over land. So it could be possible that that's the arrangement with Beatrice Sungipal. We're not sure of that, but it's a typical arrangement that they have with each other for land speculation, yes.
Now, why should the people care about this? And tell us why this is an important issue and why people should really watch what's going on there.
Well, we go back to the importance of protected areas, right? We have these protected areas because not only are they home to unique biodiversity, but they are also host to ecosystem services that our cities and communities rely on. They're basically the hot spot, the key areas where we get our water and our natural resources. And that's why we have these select sites protected. They're not protected, you know, just for no reason. They're very important to everyone. This protected area and this initiative called the Misungi Geopark Project should be protected and should be supported because this is actually an attempt by the Central DNR under Secretary Gina Lopez to make sure that the restoration of a critical watershed that impacts 20 million Filipinos downstream in Metro Manila actually takes place. If you look at the history of this particular area, it was reinforced as protected in 2011 after Ondoy because it then became very clear that the health of our forests is connected with the health of our communities. Now, flooding, all of these things happen because of our dwindling forest resources. And so the unfortunate thing that happened is between 2011 to 2018, instead of the forest cover growing, it sank from 18% or 19% to 11%. So this is basically what the government put up as a prototype for how we can do restoration in these critical sites in record time. Make sure that there is enforcement support all the way from the Secretary of DNR, because we all know that at the lower levels, there are vested interests locally, regionally, that could be interfering with enforcement.
Did it ever, since when have you been a trustee of the Misungi Geo Reserve?
I've been around since 2015.
Yeah. Did you ever think that this passion of yours that brought you to where you are now is actually going to be violent? That being an environmental defender would be tantamount to embracing violence as sort of the reality for you and the other environmental defenders that we have all across the country.
It's a very sad situation because environmentalists are the kindest, most selfless, most passionate people that I know. They do these things not for themselves, but for a lot of other people. And it is definitely a huge disappointment that for the last decade, the Philippines is actually the most dangerous and not deadly place for land defenders all over Asia and the second or the third globally in fact. I did not expect it. I expected to be reforesting. To be honest, all of our contracts, all of our agreements with government covers that it is DNR's contractual obligation to pursue enforcement or to make sure that the land is free of encumbrances such as these that tend to be very political, tend to be very violent. And so, no, I did not expect it, but someone has to do it.
So where do you go from here, Anne? I mean, you've sounded the alarm 2016, you've sounded the alarm once again. Who else are you trying to reach out to help the situation there?
I stay hopeful. It's a new administration. The area that we are currently reforesting actually covers some portions of a seedling bank project that was pursued during the Marcos time. And it was successful to an extent when it comes to protecting the site. No? When it ran out of funds, that's when encroachment started happening in. And so I'm hopeful that this new admin and hopefully Secretary Yulo takes firm action to make sure that all of these things are put under control. There are lots of things that we have already learned since 2016, since the 1990s when we started restoring these areas. And we should build on those learnings. No, we
can't and what of the LGU? Have you tried to reach out to the LGU involved? And what have they told you?
We have not had a chance to coordinate with the LGU. We sent them a letter for a similar incident, but just for a restaurant. Survey plan is there, no title, no reason to be in the field at all. They haven't responded to that particular letter. Let's see if they will do things differently.
And in the meantime, how are you going to resist the presence of the armed men there? I mean, what do you have? What do you have to defend yourselves when you're faced with these security personnel who are carrying arms?
I'm fortunate because I have forest rangers who are very passionate about the work that they do, because we belong to a larger community of, you know, honestly, just civil society or individuals, people from the civil society who have been around to help us sound the alarm for these things and to an extent contribute their skills and expertise. But we can't do this without government. Particularly, we can't do this without the Secretary of DNR and without support from the PNP and the DILG. Mm-hmm. You know, these occupations start with this. In a year's time, if they don't get to stop it while it's still in the act, you know, it's very easy for this to just turn into a building over a protected area. The time to act is definitely now. We can't dilly-dally around this. Secretary Cirilis did a good job at causing executive action to remove speculators in this area when he was around. Mm. General Anyo, when there was a land squatting syndicate, was able to make it happen for San Mateo. It should be possible to do it for this land because it's a protected area, because it's already a criminal act to go to occupy protected land, and because it's titled land. It's titled to the Republic of the Philippines. Mm. There's stronger legal ownership for government and, you know, to conduct action in defense of such speculation and invasions.
And yet you wonder, why is this still happening given all that you just mentioned? And Dumaliang there, trustee of the Masungi Gia Reserve Foundation. We appreciate you coming to the show. We wish you well. Keep us posted.
We will.
Thanks a lot for joining us today. And moving now to business, diesel and kerosene prices will see a hefty price rollback this week. Diesel prices will be slashed by 4 pesos and 15 centavos, while a liter of gasoline, make that kerosene, will now be 4 pesos and 45 centavos cheaper, but there will be no movement in gasoline prices. Despite the rollback in some oil products, it's still not enough to offset recent price increases. Diesel has jumped more than 34 pesos per liter since the start of the year. For kerosene, it's been nearly 30 pesos. The Philippine peso slightly appreciated against the greenback as trading opened on Monday. It started the session at 57.34 to the U.S. dollar from last Friday's record low close of 57.43. That was the sixth time the local currency nosedived to an all-time low this month, ahead of the monetary policy decisions from the Federal Reserve and the Philippine Central Bank. Since the start of the year, the Philippine peso has weakened against the U.S. dollar by over 6 pesos or 12.6% from its 2021 closing of 15.99. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.